It's Wednesday, November 6, 2013, and you're listening to episode 318 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 34 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
Before we get into today's topic, Wayne, Pat, you guys got some big news, good news for us.
That's true. We are now finally ready to turn on Con Planner for Fear the Con 7. I'm going to let Wayne give you some specifics since he is the guru in charge of running the con site.
All right, Wayne, let's start off with the dates for anyone who's not been paying attention. When is Fear the Con 7?
I haven't been paying attention.
I didn't write down the dates. I wrote down the prices.
The Wing Night is on June 12th, 2014. Yeah. And then the convention is on June 13th and 14th of 2014.
I wanted to make some announcements about the ticket prices before we put the site live because we're doing things a little bit differently this year. We've been listening to everyone's feedback from last year and people were wanting one-day tickets and things like that. We're looking to make the best con possible, and for us, that means we want tickets to come in early. So we want to reward you for buying your tickets as early as possible. So the site will be up on Friday, and when it comes out, what you can expect to see ticket price-wise. If you buy your ticket now, anytime between now and January 1st, a two-day all-inclusive pass is only $55. A one-day ticket will be $30. That covers both days of the con, that covers Wing Night, that covers everything that we would charge you for.
And does the one-day ticket, if you get one for Friday or Saturday, also cover the Wing Night?
Yes. Wing Night, if you buy online in advance, Wing Night will be included.
So any kind of ticket, Wing Night's included. Okay.
Then from January 1st to June 1st, a two-day ticket prices will raise to $60 and one day will be $35. So it is in your advantage to buy the tickets now before the end of December. At the door, ticket prices are going to be $65 for a two-day or $35 for that one day. And we are going to require that people have their tickets by Wing Night, or Wing Night itself will be a $10 charge. But if you buy your tickets in advance online, Wing Night is all-inclusive with that.
And in terms of the basic details, everything else will remain the same. What you can expect out of Wing Night will remain the same. We'll have the beer service. We'll have the food going on in the kitchen. All the same stuff that we've had at Fear the Con in the past, you can expect to be back this year. So don't expect any of that to change. And we're hoping having it in June instead of having it in either March or May will make things a lot easier because it shouldn't be butting up against graduations or falling in the middle of people's school years or things like that. So we're hoping that that will make things a little bit easier. And also, I can't tell you for sure just yet, but I am 90 some odd percent sure that we will be doing like we do every year. We'll be doing the tourism the week leading up to the convention, starting the Sunday before the con. And I will give you confirmation of that within the next couple of episodes. I just need to check some things on my schedule to make sure that that's possible. Yep. But if that's possible, I will be doing local tourism the week before the convention. So if you want to come down early, obviously, that part is completely free, except whatever it costs you to be there and participate in the activities. There's no ticket cost or anything associated with that. So if you've been at Fear the Con in the past, you know why you want to be there. If you've not been to Fear the Con in the past, let me assure you, you want to be there. You are going to miss something really cool if you are not, and I'm looking forward to it.
More details, fearthecon.com or feartheboot.com. Take a look at the forums. There'll be a lot of people talking about it.
Right. Though fearthecon.com will not be updated until Friday.
Yep.
All right. There's a topic that we're going to cover, but I think this is a topic that's probably going to take a full hour to cover. In fact, it may take more than a full hour to cover. It's a topic that has a lot of little subtopics, a lot of aspects to it. And we're just going to see how this goes, because since I'm still dealing with that throat thing, this may end up getting spread out across 2, 3, maybe even 4 episodes. I don't know. But this is something that I think is it's a great topic. I'll give Chad props for pitching it. But the moment he pitched it, I was excited to talk about it. All right. So let me set this up.
What is this again?
Fear the Boot. It's a podcast. You've been on for 7.5 years.
This is Dan's house. I know the new guards over the mics are confused.
It's okay. Really distracting. Okay, this orange thing is really distracting the out of me.
I have to say, this is absolutely wonderful. We have the little foam cushy things that you put over the mics.
we've had the same gray, nasty ones on there for like 7 years. They're covered in pet hair and people spit, and they were just
faded. One of them was ripped.
So Dan's is red. And I keep adjusting my head so that the red couche goes directly over his nose.
You should see my view.
It's hilarious.
Pat's is orange.
Yeah.
Pat has a bright orange nose.
We did.
I'm like actually, focusing on my eyes. Like, it's
brighter. Well, because even the previous ones, even off the shelf, the one that was on mine was kind of a really dull, kind of pale green. Mm-hmm. The one that was on the Mike Wayne's currently using was kind of a dull blue. Chad, I think yours was, I think black.
And but then it was Pat's, gray when I took it off.
Yeah, and then Pat's was a charcoal gray that was about the same as the black.
There's a screwy psychological thing going here. I sat down kind of drained and not feeling peppy. And now this bright blue just has to be energetic.
And these are so bright and vibrant. This is a vibrant red. Wayne's got this vibrant blue. Chad has this kind of forest green one. And Pat's got this construction orange.
Honestly, shouldn't the orange one be on Wayne's, Mike? I mean, he is a ginger.
I got to pick my color, Pat.
Pat, you're safer. No truck will hit you by accident.
Yes, that is true.
All right. So the topic that we're going to talk about
is not the mic guards.
The mic guards are amusing, but no, it's not the topic we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, and I love this abbreviation, playing a boss. Chaz just took a picture of me with a red nose. He's going to be posting, I assume, online somewhere.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Everywhere. of the things.
The topic is playing a boss. Now, what do I mean by playing a boss?
It means because you're just awesome. You're a boss.
When I say playing a boss, I'm not talking about the guy who's in charge. I'm also not talking about playing Bruce Springsteen, though that could be an interesting campaign if run by the right person. Mm-hmm. Boss is an abbreviation for beautiful and unique snowflake.
Yes, and from Fight Club.
And I do realize that if you were to put that in German, it actually would be Baus, but we're going to pronounce it boss anyway.
Yes.
So, all right.
Everyone wants to be a boss.
Right, and that's
the goal.
That's the goal, okay?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. When you're playing a role-playing game, most people want something about their character to stand out. And we're using the term somewhat tongue-in-cheek here, but this whole beautiful, unique snowflake idea, most people, in fact, I would dare say probably almost every gamer out there, wants their character to stand out in some unique, memorable, meaningful way.
Let me put to you like this, Dan. You make a character. You are a programmer. You make programs. That's what you do. That's what Dan does in his day job. When you go to your table and you sit down with your game and you're making a new character, do you raise your hand and say, I want to play a game in modern day where there's no magic and no war, no crazy stuff going on, and it's totally like it is right now, and I want to play a programmer? And I want you guys to play other people in my IT department. Wayne, your help desk. There's this guy named Jerry. You're playing him. You, Pat, you're Joan from accounting, and that's about as saucy as we're going to get with it. And now we are all normal people in a normal setting, and we're role-playing normality.
And that's angle one of being a boss, is you are a boss compared to your real life.
Right.
But I think you also have the internal issue of the boss, which is, for example, let's just go to good old D&D. Do we really want to play a game where all of us are elven fighters?
Right.
Every single one of us is the exact same race, same class, from the exact same clan.
And that's our defining characteristic. I mean, we don't have, like, this crazy detailed background or this interesting character. Because mechanics aside, you could be this beautiful and unique snowflake that is a human fighter level one.
Right.
You just have 20 pages of background that's really intricate and really interesting and detailed and has all this kind of stuff.
Now, here's the thing, though. I think you are 100% right. And this is a point that I had further down, but we can go ahead and start there, which is you can certainly make a character who's a boss without doing it at the conceptual level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could theoretically have a group where everybody is playing the same class, race. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, I could give you all carbon copied character sheets, and yet you could still play very distinct individuals by playing the personalities differently. If you think about this in your day job, you know, being a programmer, I work with other programmers. We are certainly very diverse individuals, even though we have very overlapping skill sets and interests. I mean, they're not identical skill sets and interests.
No, all you developers are exactly the same. You're scum.
And you can look at this, whatever it is you do for a living. You know, there are probably other people that you have as peers or colleagues or whatever, or have had in the past or will have in the future. And these people are obviously not defined by their profession, mm-hmm. their race. In this case, we're all human. Obviously, that's not the only defining characteristic. So one thing I think you can do is to make your personality interesting. But here's the mm-hmm. thing. Interesting personalities, I think, typically, not always, mm-hmm. but typically come out over time.
Right.
Yes, you can have somebody where they're boisterous. They make a lot of jokes. They have an obvious tick or quirk to them that comes out immediately. But if you've got half a dozen people, mm-hmm. and that's true of all of them, that's kind of one, annoying, yeah. and two, I think, pushes plausibility. So I think what you're going to hit up against is if you do this for an entire group, you have to accept that your status as a boss mm-hmm. is going to come out over time. The things that really make you, you, the experiences, the hopes, the dreams, the fears, whatever, these are going to come out over time.
Well, and I think this whole thing really boils down to what people want in a game. What people typically want is you want to feel that there's a role for you to play in that game, whether it be mechanically, socially, whatever. Mm-hmm. You want to feel like there's a reason that you're with this group of people. There's something you're contributing, that you're not just dragging along, that you're not superfluous. You want to actually have, yeah. you know, a purpose. And that leads into wanting to be unique. Because if my purpose is the exact same as Pat's purpose in a game, neither one of us are going to feel that we're really contributing, because you can just substitute one for the other.
And when that draws us,
if you take the idea of background personality off the table.
No, I'm even saying background and personality.
Hmm.
If you have two people with the exact same personality, you can run into the same thing.
No, no. What I'm saying is that let's take this as base as we can.
I'm
You're a fighter.
Saying,
he's a fighter. We don't need two fighters in the group, but we don't put personality into the argument. You know, because we're playing a role-playing
game. If you don't put personality into your personality,
but
that's what I'm saying. You can get it either way. That's why I'm saying both of them boil to the same thing.
Right, but I think, though, Wayne, you did draw a second distinct and important point, which is I'm one of those people where I want to know that my contribution to the party is unique.
Yeah.
And there's several reasons I want that. One,
see, I don't need that. Mechanically.
Right.
Mechanically.
No, and I get that. Yeah. And
but
I get
you
that.
Want that personality and
personality
character
is, yes, right. Absolutely.
But I even want it mechanically because of the mm-hmm. fact that I want to feel like my contributions are unique. And also, I think it guarantees that there will be things in the game that will be uniquely mine. I know mm-hmm. I'm going to get the spotlight because as soon as somebody's hurt, I'm the only medic. In fact, when I play MMOs, let's move from RPGs to video games. When I play MMOs, not always, but a lot of the times when I'm about to join a guild or a group of friends, one of the first things I ask, what do you guys not have?
Yeah.
What is nobody playing? Because that guarantees that I will feel needed as I play the game. And for a tabletop game, it's no different. I'm not saying you can't have a great game where everyone's playing an elven fighter. I absolutely mm-hmm. believe you can. But you know, when we look at, for example, the most recent D&D game that I played in with you guys, Pat was playing a human wizard sorcerer sort of hybrid. Wayne was playing a human bard. I was playing a gnoll fighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, these are characters who are very distinct. Pat's immortal. Wayne's a guy on the run. I'm someone trying to build a society. All kinds of things about these characters, both at the personality level, the background level, class, race, whatever. You know, we were all very distinct from one another. And I think both things, I mean, Pat, I would wager you're on the same page here. I'm going to guess, I don't think you and I have ever had this conversation, but I would lay money that you're the same way that I am, that I don't think you'd want to be the third wizard in the party.
No, absolutely not. That's something I always, I do the same thing that you do. My concept
is the
of
third wizard the one who has to go to the church, or does he join the military?
I think it's second. My whole concept or my line of thinking whenever you got a party is I am all for like the balanced party and making sure that you have the certain aspects like represented in the party so that you have good coverage of things. Because personally, for me, I don't want to have to say, OK, you know, we're all elven wizard or we're all elven fighters. we don't have a single healer. Well, guess what the NPC is going to be? You know, that the GM's going to run with us. I don't want to have to necessarily depend on an NPC. I would rather have it be one of the fellow players.
Right. That's one of the reasons I like having support classes that can kind of fit in here or there and switch. Looking at a paladin, for example, although I wouldn't exactly call it a support class, if you're in a group that has less healing, when you level, you start taking more of the healing aspect of it. If you're in a group that's not doing enough damage, you go down that path instead.
You guys in your balanced parties. I mean, in the one where we, with Gnarl and all that, with the bard, who was our healer? It's the bard.
Well, actually, it was Rot.
Well, you know.
It wasn't terribly helpful.
No, it wasn't. He whined about it. And
I actually did a lot of healing. Yeah. That's one of the reasons. Yeah. One of the things I liked about the bard was that there were, it couldn't do anything well. But it could do a lot of little things here and there.
You have no idea how much that bothered me that our healer was a f***ing bard. The most ineffectual healing class possible.
You had a bard. It was a cleric. It was effective enough to heal your ass.
We did that eventually.
Eventually you had a cleric.
He did not whine about it. He did not whine. He was a dick. He was a dick.
There was a huge
We either had that difference. Yeah. Yes. Thank God we got that, because then I didn't have the old woman that spit into my wounds. Hot the loogie and rubbed it into my wounds.
That's true.
You're healed.
At least Rot was just mouthy. He wasn't disgusting.
Exactly.
But
I punished you for using NPC.
Let's move out of D&D here for a minute, because I want to illustrate this outside of the usual generic fallback. Mm-hmm. Let's say we're playing a Star Trek game. Let's say that we're all playing engineers. I mean, obviously, the engineering is a department. Mm-hmm. It has a staff. It, depending on the ship you're talking about,
I would totally play that game.
Half a dozen, two dozen, mm-hmm. multiple shifts. Who knows how many people?
Department heads, section leaders.
But the point being, if the ship goes into combat, we're all basically doing the same thing. If we beam down to a planet, oh, hey, there's a life form we've never encountered before.
Let's beam down the entirety of engineering third shift.
Who has the life sciences skills? Nobody but the NPC. Broken door. Oh, we're all dogpiling on it. But as soon as we run into a life form we've never seen before, as soon as we're trying to identify some weird kind of whatever, none of us can do it. But once again, busted door. We got that covered.
And I think that may be one of the fastest ways to end up with a NPC that's a Mary Sue NPC. Not even intentional, but the GM knows that your party needs this, so he's built an NPC around it, and you can't have anything happen to that NPC, because if something does, the party is missing
even
something.
Even if not a Mary Sue NPC, it's an indispensable NPC.
Right.
That NPC has to always be there, because you cannot perform the basic functions of the game without that NPC being there. Now, when you were talking earlier about taking slightly different specialties, and I think certainly within a game like D&D, we could all play wizards and go down different specialty schools. You could play clerics that have very different domains. You could play in Star Trek. You could play, we're all engineers, but one of us specializes in weapon systems. One of us specializes in warp drive technology. You go to the electives, at least the FASA game had, and maybe my electives are all in biology, and Wayne's electives are all in geology, and Chad's electives are all in history. And so you could still, I think, within that archetype, you could still branch out.
No, my electives were in grav ball.
No, you had rocks for jocks.
That's right. My Star Trek characters, I never knew what to do with the electives, so I always took geology and I always took grav ball, because grav ball was their fakey sport and there was a skill for it, so I took rocks for jocks.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I took rocks for jocks. There was a game where every one of you had rocks for jocks.
Yeah, and that was our
connection.
That was
your group template.
That was our group template.
That was how you met each other.
We were all on the Starfleet grav ball team. Together.
Yeah, and you all had rocks for jocks together.
Yes.
Probably taught by the coach of the grab ball team. But you can still, I agree, you can have diversity within what otherwise would appear to be uniqueness. I think the question that you have to ask is, one, do the players recognize that possibility? And two, is that sufficient? You know, let's go ahead and answer this among ourselves. Let's especially look at someone like Pat and I, who really want to be diverse. Would you feel satisfied knowing the whole group was playing wizards, but we each had different specialty school? There was a necromancer versus an evoker versus a conjurer, whatever. Would that be enough for you? Or would you still feel like that was really too close together?
It would be too close for me. That concept, I guess, just doesn't really appeal to me. Not as a long-standing thing. I mean, maybe it's a one-shot A con game, sure. A one shot, yeah, I'd do it. But I mean, if this is like, okay, you know, Chad's pitching a game, like, okay, for our next game that we're going to play for the maybe the next 3 to 6 months or whatever, we're all going to be wizards.
Or like, dwarves.
Out. But that's different, though. Actually, and I will yeah. I will get around to talking about our game eventually. Not quite yet. But, you know, the race is totally different to me than the classes. I'm talking about classes. And I do think we're going to talk about maybe some splat classes later on.
Oh, yes. That's something else things to talk about.
But it's just too homogenous.
That's right.
Homogenous for me.
I'm on the other side.
Wizards.
I'm on the other side of that, having run two Bard's Bard games at the con.
God,
every one of those Bards was completely unique compared to every other Bard. I think you can do that in classes.
They were all uniquely horrible.
Each one was a different train wreck.
Yes.
You can do that with some classes better than others. Fighters, there are a lot of things you can do with them, but when you really get down to it, they're fighting. They're hitting stuff.
Yeah.
With a wizard, there's all the different schools you can go down. Feel different to me.
I will agree with that, Wayne, that I think certainly, going back to good old D&D, wizard and cleric, for example, offer themselves to a lot greater diversity than fighter does.
Yeah, I would have no problem with a group of all wizards, but a group of all fighters,
within Star Trek or something like that, I'd have to look at the individual game within the FASA game. I could make you guys all engineers and still give you a lot of diversity. If I look at a game like Battletech, in Battletech, you're all playing mech warriors, generally speaking.
But the game is designed that way.
Yeah.
You're talking about a game that is specifically designed for you to be that way.
And I'll say that's something I struggle with in Battletech.
Like in Star Trek, I would, a party full of engineers, I wouldn't do it because I'm like, okay, we need science officer, we need a security specialist, because we need somebody that's good in combat. Because I'm sorry, engineers, we can tell you all about how the combat works and how the weapons work. But we, you know, traditionally, probably not that good in combat.
Here's the thing,
we haven't taken combat training.
CBs were pretty kick ass.
If you look at something
back in the day, sure.
If you look at something like Battletech, I think part of what you see is, yes, you're all playing mech warriors. I mean, once in a rare while, I'd get somebody who would play a vehicle pilot or an infantryman or something. But generally, everyone's playing mech warriors. But the mechs themselves are distinct.
Yes, and I was going to say,
the guy in the locust versus the guy in the battlemaster. They still, even though they're both mech warriors, they have very distinct roles, even on the battlefield.
I still struggle with that with Battletech, feeling like I had a different role than other people on the field.
You haven't played enough Battletech. That's the plain and simple of it, because he's very right. And the mech is, in essence, your different character classes, like in a D&D parallel.
Scout, support.
It really is.
Yeah.
Flanker.
We've got a ton of things to talk about on this, so there's definitely going to be a second, possibly even a third show on this. But there's one more thing that I want to talk about that I feel is important to tie in with the setup for this discussion, and then we can move on to some more kind of nitty-gritty sort of stuff in the next episode. How do you play a boss? How do you play a character that to you is satisfyingly unique, presuming that's important to you, without in the process overshadowing someone else's attempt to be unique? Because, and I realize the most obvious way is you're a dick and you play the same thing they're playing. Let's presume you're not doing that. But the fact is, if everyone stands out and is special, isn't there kind of a danger that just becomes a hum where nobody is special?
Yeah, it's the new normal. Well, I want to talk about boss levels.
Well, now, let's hold off on boss levels.
Come on. No, because
boss levels is a rabbit hole that's going to go really deep. And we'll get to that next episode, I promise. But for this one, I just wanted, without getting to boss levels, levels of bossness, how do you play a character at the right level of bossness to not effectively go to a level where everybody's special and therefore nobody is special?
Boss levels.
If you're trying, certainly if you're trying to wrap up this episode in the next couple minutes, I think this is a topic that could go on for an entire show, because I think there's a lot of nuance to what you're asking there, because I think it's more than just, there's a lot of levels to it, from mechanical to personality.
I want to focus
on personality more than anything else on this very question.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is it's a matter of how do you want to be special and unique? Because that makes a difference on whether you're overshadowing other people.
Yeah,
because
we actually have a lot of, I think, good examples for this from a lot of the previous games that we've played in the last 3 or 4 years.
Let me give a simple thought here to close out this episode on, where I'm at least going to partially answer this. And I will certainly leave the caveat that we are going to come back and explore this more next episode. I got multiple bullet points here. But let me at least give one little idea, which is I think what you need to look at is talk to the other players or get a good read on them if you know them pretty well. Figure out what it is that to them makes that character special and don't step on that. D&D game. Pat, you're playing Saren, the immortal ancient, the once a lord.
Evil. Immortal ancient.
Well, right, we're all evil. Yes. But, you know, once a lord, wants to be a ruler again.
Mm-hmm.
When I created Gnarl, he was nothing like that.
Yeah.
You know, he was a fighter. He was trying to reconstitute a tribe. He wasn't interested in human politics and taking over human cities. The things that I saw you getting out of playing Saren, I very intentionally said, okay, Chad, you talk about all the time, spotlight, moving the spotlight from one character to the next, sharing the spotlight, giving equal time in the spotlight. And we always talk about that from the GM's perspective. But I think from the player perspective, I can say, as I'm making my character, that I know over the course of this game, it's a D&D game, we're going to get in fights, boom, Gnollish fighter. But there's also going to be issues of magic and human politics, boom, Pat's character.
I've always
there's going to be issues about the kind of crooked history of the land and stuff. Boom, Wayne's character. And I intentionally did not spread my character into those areas such that they would have the spotlight when those subjects came up.
I have always said the best players are people who have run games because they understand that concept. Even if they don't articulate it, they understand the concept with the game master and the players trying to do of, as a player, it's not all about me. It's about me sometimes. And it's about Pat sometimes. And then it's about all of us sometimes. So as a player, what can I do to help the game master move that spotlight around? And sometimes that's stepping back.
Right.
Sometimes that's pushing another player up.
Let's go with a different example. Let's say we're playing a Star Trek game. We're all engineers. Let's say I'm looking at Chad, and I know to you, it's personality. Mm-hmm. And so you decide to play a guy who's kind of boisterous, has a still hidden beneath one of the consoles, and maybe is, you know, doing a little bit of drinking he shouldn't be. Okay, so I might tie into that. Mm-hmm. I might be kind of, you know, maybe I'm your drinking buddy.
Yeah.
But I'm not also going to be the boisterous guy who's got a still hidden somewhere. You know, I'm not going to make an identical personality to yours.
Right.
I might look at someone like Pat and say, okay, Pat's got skills in life sciences in addition to his engineering stuff. So I'm not going to take my electives in life sciences. I'm going to take my electives in languages or something like that. So when life sciences comes up, Pat has his chance to shine. When languages come up, I have my chance to shine. And I think that right there is a good start.
Have you ever stumbled on that, though? Like, you don't necessarily vet every single one of your skills with every single one of the other players or something like that. But have you ever been playing a game where Pat, say, makes this character, and then one of his things is investigation, paranormal investigation. He's really good at paranormal investigation. And you're thinking, all right, I might be this reporter, and I might be this guy, and I might have a gun, and I might have this drinking problem, but you know what? I'm a paranormal investigator, but I don't know that little skill thing. And then I'm making a character who's like a psychic, we'll say.
Right.
He's a charlatan, but you know, it's like, okay, I got all these skill points left over, but since he's not a real psychic, we're going to do a lot of paranormal stuff. All right, I'm going to jack up paranormal investigation. And then it's like 3 months into the game, somebody's like, okay, who's got paranormal investigation? Pat's like, it's my time to... And I'm like, yeah, I got aced out. I roll like 20 dice for it, so let's go. And then Pat's like, oh.
I think I would say two things. I would say, first of all, the few times I run
I'm sorry, Pat, to take your paranormal investigation spotlight for the game that never existed.
Right. The few times I've seen that, it has typically come down to it's a skill so secondary that everyone's happy. Multiple people have it because since it only came up once, it was probably important. So, like, thank heavens we have three people that can roll it so two can fail.
Yes.
But the other thing I would say is if it is so background that it never got mentioned in character creation or the early games, then it's probably not that important, or there was really piss poor communication when you were designing the group.
I agree, because I think I think in most instances when you're going through character creation, that kind of thing is just going to come out in the sort of the general talk around the table. Because in most things, like in D&D, it's relatively easy. You're more class-based. But in the example you give, I think the distinction, though, is that in that kind of a game, your secondary skills or whatever are very important. So that is the equivalent to me of cleric, wizard, whatever.
Right.
So, and you're going to know that, and it's going to, you're going to talk about it and say, oh, okay, well, this is my character, and these are my primary and secondary skills that I've taken, because that's the bulk of the character.
Well, and I would hope you would have that conversation.
I think you would. And again, if you don't, I think there are bigger issues.
The only time I've had it happen was in a con game once. And it was a Traveler game that Church was running. And we all had the characters we had made the previous year. And he had some other characters ready in case people weren't there the previous year. And we had one guy that was the pilot. That was his big thing. And he was rolling and rolling and rolling. We realized about halfway through the session, I had a higher skill in that than he did. But that's his thing. So it's like, you know what? I don't want to take over that just because I can roll better at it. Because that is his thing.
I had that happen once, and it was between Pat, myself, and Pat, you never knew it. Because it was in our Dresden game, and what happened is that we were lacking some sort of skill, and there were level ups, and I don't remember the specifics because I don't remember anything, but there were some level ups, and we were missing some important skill, and your character was like, well, I'm going to take this skill so that we have it covered. And I didn't process that. I didn't hear it or pay attention or process it.
We were talking mechanics, so his eyes were glazed over.
Well, I was making my second character. This is the campaign where I played two characters. And so I made this coyote, magical, illusionist character. And so one of the things I took is like, you know what? Last game, we had a real blind spot in this skill area thing. I'm going to take that. Yeah. And it was like three or four games in, and you had mentioned something about it with your characters. Oh, yeah, I finally get to use this. And I looked down my sheet and you were excited about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he did say he was going to.
I'm trying to remember what it is.
It was like mad knowledge of magic or something like that. And what I did is I erased that skill off my character sheet and I changed it to something else.
Which I am not against that kind of retconning, because
I mean, technically it's cheating, but
the game's about having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that overlap is going to rob someone else of their fun, both as a game master and player, I'd say, you know what?
Yeah.
Drop life sciences and switch it to rock for jocks.
Yeah, and it's like, and this was Pat's idea originally, and I hadn't listened, and so and not even making a thing of it.
All right, so we're going to be back next time to talk about levels of boss, and I've got all kinds of other stuff on that, and these guys do too. So thank you guys for tuning in. Hold that place right where you are, because this is where we're going to pick up. So just sit there with your headphones on.
For a week.
Yes. It may be less than a week, because since I have a lead time, I can probably drop it a day or two earlier.
Long enough to go to the internet on Friday and buy your content. But after that, they come back on.
Precisely. Actually, don't even take them off. Leave them on while you log on.
Wait for it. It will come.
Are they allowed to wash?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
Gamers don't wash.
Poop sock.
I put the picture of you up on Facebook already.
Poop sock, and we will catch you next time.
Poop sock.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.